Hey everyone, before we get into today's podcast, we want to take a second and thank you, the listener, and everyone who has had a hand in building the Gold and Blue Nation podcast to what it is today. This is episode number 100 of the GBN pod, and we couldn't do it without you, the folks who are listening to us right now.
100 episodes down and plenty more to come. We'll keep podcast episodes coming to you every week throughout baseball season, pick back up with weekly episodes in the fall, and continue to bring you great long-form interviews, just like we have through the first 100 episodes. If you like what you hear, share with a family member or friend, and get them on board too.
Thanks for listening to the first 99 episodes, and now, without any further delay, here is Gold and Blue Nation Podcast episode 100. Arguably the hottest team in Big 12 baseball has cooled off in a big way out in the plains of Lubbock, Texas. You are listening to the Gold and Blue Nation podcast. Ryan Decker and Kevin Redfern here with you in our Morgantown studios. Kevin, West Virginia was arguably the hottest team in the Big 12 conference entering this weekend, but man, ran into a buzzsaw in a big way out in Lubbock this weekend, losing not once, not twice, but getting swept for the first time this season by the Red Raiders.
Yeah, it looked like in the last few series, West Virginia had figured out how to win those 1-2 run ball games, but this weekend was a step back from that, particularly in Sunday's games 2 and 3 when they lost both games by 2 runs. First game was kind of a slugfest on Texas Tech's side. You can chalk that one up to a bad start and some good hitting from the Red Raiders. But Saturday and Sunday, I mean, West Virginia had a lot of opportunities to both tie and take leads in those games and did not. Had a couple of good pitching performances in relief in both of those games, but which is a step forward is what I'm trying to say there, I guess. But overall, a disappointment out in Lubbock.
Yeah, so because of weather, this was a one game on, one day off, and then 2 games on day 3 at Sunday of this series. So Friday, West Virginia losing in the series opener, and then WVU dropping both games in a doubleheader on Sunday. And really, there were some themes of these games. You mentioned game 1 was just a power show by Texas Tech. The theme of day 2 of this series, the doubleheader on Sunday, was missed opportunities for West Virginia. We'll get into this more once we talk about these games specifically, but missed opportunities, Kevin, a big reason why West Virginia is leaving Lubbock empty-handed.
Yeah, you've got double-digit runners left on base in game 2. You almost hit that mark again in game 3 when you leave 9 runners on base. J.J. Weatherholt's doing about as much as he can do at the plate, coming up with big RBIs in both games. But it just wasn't enough from top to bottom in the lineup. It wasn't enough in clutch situations from top to bottom in the lineup. But definitely a good series to learn from going forward. I think we can all agree, a significantly easier conference schedule to close out the season.
All right, well, let's get into it. This series got started Friday night, and Kevin, pretty simply, West Virginia not really in this game from the start. One of those games that Texas Tech pretty much just dominates from start to finish. And unfortunately, another rough outing this time around this week for Aiden Major.
Yeah, Aiden Major, he rattled off 3 consecutive quality starts in March. And then since then, really that Oklahoma game, things have been off. We've talked about it a lot on this podcast. Outside of a strong performance at Oklahoma State this last 6 weeks or so, he hasn't really been able to get over the 5-inning hump. That continues again on Friday in a 3-inning start. He gives up 6 earned walks, just 2, strikes out 5. So really, he was just getting hit around by a good slugging Texas Tech team, which another thing that we've talked at length about. But yeah, and then once Texas Tech was able to get up early, the bats weren't able to keep up on the WVU side. The runs kept coming consistently for the Red Raiders and just couldn't keep up the entire game.
Yeah, so Texas Tech, by getting to Aiden Major early in this game, the Red Raiders take a 7-0 lead through 5 innings. West Virginia finally gets on the board in the 6th inning with 2 runs there, but Texas Tech answers with 4 runs back in the 6th, and then they really put the hammer down in the 8th, adding 4 more there. It's a 15-2 final score. 15 runs on 12 hits for the Red Raiders Friday night. Only 2 runs on just 4 hits in the series opener for the Mountain Mountaineers. West Virginia, which has been a pretty good defensive team at times this season, does commit three errors in that game Friday night, and both teams leave six runners on. But Kevin, you have alluded to it here. We've talked about recently Aiden Major just not being as sharp as he was a month ago at this time. Is there anything that you're seeing from Aiden as far as what's maybe been different for him his last couple of starts versus what he was doing while he was being really successful in March and the early part of this season?
Well, I think it all comes down to early game control. If he's able to pound the zone early, that usually sets the tone for a strong start. But, I mean, that wasn't necessarily exactly the case on Friday. Again, he only walked two guys. But, I mean, we've been trying to pinpoint what's going on with Aiden. We don't know. I mean, obviously, his stronger starts have come at home at Kendrick Family Ballpark. We're talking about, is it the artificial mound versus the real clay mound? I'm sure they have a ton of questions they're asking within the locker room and within the facility, because it's just a completely different pitcher we've seen here in April and the end of March than we did at the end of February and the beginning of March. For Aiden Major, but I'd imagine that they're going to continue to ride with him in the Friday role. They just need consistency in that rotation, and then hopefully if he can, you know, just right the ship with one good one, kind of like that Oklahoma State one, it'll be a snowball effect.
Yeah, going back to his start on March 22nd against Oklahoma, this is now four of his last five appearances, giving up at least four runs, somewhere between four, five, and six runs allowed in those starts. The only outlier in that stretch was a strong performance, eight innings, six hits, two runs allowed against Oklahoma State, a 13 strikeout performance for Aiden Major in a game that West Virginia ultimately lost. That's been the thing here is, and you go back one start further from that streak I just mentioned to March 15th, he was solid against Ohio State, and that's a series that West Virginia loses surprisingly at home. Oklahoma, West Virginia gets no hit in that performance, but then WVU comes back to win the series. Oklahoma State, he's great Friday night. West Virginia loses that series. And then Kansas, UCF, West Virginia ends up sweeping those series, but Aiden Major is not great. So it's almost like timing-wise, Aiden not timing up with the success of WVU, which is unfortunate. And bad timing, I think, to a degree, has been a microcosm of just of the season for WVU.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're alluding to the beginning of the year with injuries and all that. And then imagine had the beginning of the year pitching, both with Aiden and then when Derek Clark came back,
right.
If you could have matched up those timelines and then the offense once J.J. Weatherholt and Logan Sauve came back. I mean, you can make an argument that they're saying in the dugout, hey, like, we still don't know what we look like yet, and even though we might have reached the top of the Big 12 at one point. But, yeah, I mean, I think everyone's waiting to see what this team looks like when they're firing on all cylinders.
So it's a 15-2 final Friday night in Lubbock. No game on Saturday because of some inclement weather in the Lubbock area. So we've got two games on Sunday. Let's talk about game one of the doubleheader on Sunday. It's another Texas Tech win, unfortunately, for the Mountaineers, a 6-4 final. And big news here on the GBN podcast, Derek Clark does not throw nine innings on Sunday. That's a big one for West Virginia, as he's not able to go super long in this one. The Red Raiders get to him early on as well. Derek Clark, 5 2/3 innings, gives up five runs on 12 hits, does strike out four and walk two, but it was just solid contact from a really good Red Raiders hitting lineup. And unfortunately, Derek Clark not able to go long, and that brings the bullpen into things, which right now, with the status of West Virginia's bullpen being everything looks different, everyone's in a bit of a different role, with no David Hagman in there to right the ship.
Yeah, I mean, we talked last week on the last edition of the podcast. We asked, what does this team look like when Derek Clark has an off week? Well, we're getting our view of that right now. Still has yet to go less than five innings in the start. So, I mean, not a horrible day. I mean, only giving up five earned when you give up 12 hits, only walking two. I mean, if this is the floor, that's probably a good thing. And then Hamilton Oliver, who's been quietly pretty strong in relief, he only is credited with one earned run. He kind of puts Joseph Fredericks in a tough situation later in the game when he gets pulled. But Derek Clark, you're going to expect one of these from him. You hope that it doesn't turn into two in a row. But gosh, again, Texas Tech just hitting the ball hard. They're getting base hits when they're hitting the ball soft. That ballpark plays really well for their offense. It's part of the reason why I think this was their 20th win at home in game one of Sunday's doubleheader, which is crazy. They were like 20-3 after the win in game one. So, I mean, credit to their offense, but if you lose a 6-4 game, giving up 12 hits from your starter, not the worst thing in the world, but you end up losing the series, which is certainly a knock.
Yeah, and you know, Derek Clark, he only goes 5 2/3. He gives up 5 runs. The positive thing was in those 5 innings he completed, he stranded 5 combined runners. This could have been a much more lopsided score in Texas Tech's favor if Derek Clark isn't able to stay poised there on the mound and be able to strand those guys on the base paths. Texas Tech, they score 3 runs in the second inning. West Virginia comes back with single runs in the 4th and 5th innings. But the theme for this game was missed opportunities, and to a degree, West Virginia being robbed in this game. There in the 4th, Kyle West rips a double, what would have been a double at least, down the first base and right field line. Unfortunately, the ball boy for Texas Tech doesn't realize the ball bounces fair. He catches the ball. And when Kyle West hit that that base hit, there were 2 runners on. At least one, if not both, runners would have scored in that scenario. So West Virginia, due to the ruling by the umpires, is held to just 1 run on that base hit, which turns into a ground rule or an interference double for Kyle West. West Virginia only stays at 1 run in that inning. So they trail 3-1 through 4. Sam White draws a bases loaded walk in the 5th to get West Virginia back to within 1, but the Mountaineers strand the base. Well, they were loaded, grounded into a double play, kills that inning right there. And then in the 6th, West Virginia gets 2 more runners on in that inning and unfortunately can't bring anybody around to score. And just after that, Texas Tech adds to its lead with a leadoff home run in the bottom of the 6th, and they add 1 more courtesy of Gavin Cash, who is just really heating up for this Texas Tech team. 5-4 in game 1 of the doubleheader, game 2 of the series on early Sunday. And West Virginia, even with a 2-run double from J.J. Weatherholt in the 8th, not able to ever break even in this game. The Mountaineers stranding 13 runners on base. You just can't do that against a really good hitting team in Texas Tech, especially when the Red Raiders are in their own ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. A lot of 2-out clutch situations there that you'd like to have your hitters take advantage of. Those are the ones that you're going to get in the conference tournament and potentially an NTA tournament, and you just don't capitalize. So at the end of the day, that's going to come down to leaders. I mean, J.J. Weatherholt kind of got his with a 2-out RBI double in the 8th. That was a huge hit, and that set up Logan Sauve to potentially tie the game with a runner in scoring position. You'll take that if you're West Virginia 10 times out of 10, and he's going to capitalize in that situation probably 3 or 4 times out of 10. So it's tough break on the Kyle West double that I think we're almost positive that would have been a 2-run double had there not been any sort of interference, but you're kind of happy it happens early in the game, doesn't impact you later. You try to play over it, you try to get over it. Both teams leave a lot of runners on base in this one, and it ends up being a 2-run game nonetheless.
13 runners left on for the Mountaineers. I'd have to imagine, I was trying to look this up now, and this stat, at least where I'm looking on the official WVU sports.com webpage, doesn't show me runners left on base on a game-by-game basis, but that has to be one of the higher marks for West Virginia this season, 13 runners left on. And yeah, you go back to the Kyle West play. Certainly when it happens in the 4th inning, you've got time to make up for that, but when you leave a run on the board there because of a ruling and there's some interpretation and some gray area there of maybe where that runner was, that trail runner was when the ball was interfered with, you lose a run there and then you don't capitalize in the 5th and the 6th, and you can't bring J.J. around to score there in the 8th. And West Virginia also had a chance there in the 9th as well, had a chance and just couldn't break through. When you leave that many chances, two chance, I guess you could say, hard to win a game like that.
Yeah, I mean, you can almost hear Randy Mazey talking about it. Like, if we would have had the opportunity to speak with him post-game after game 1 Sunday, he would have been talking about missed opportunities, leaving runners on base. 13 is just a lot. Not quite sure how many of those were in scoring position, but a good amount of them were.
All right, so now let's get to the series finale here. West Virginia trying to avoid being swept for the first time this season. You know, Randy Mazie has spoken at length over the last couple of years of going back to the 2022 season. West Virginia went that entire year without losing three games in a row. Didn't lose three games in a row at all last season until the very last weekend series of the regular season against Texas, which ultimately cost the Mountaineers the outright ownership of the Big 12 conference title. And West Virginia fans won't have to wait that long this season for the Mountaineers to lose three straight, because that's what happens on Sunday. Texas Tech winning this series, sweeping it because of what happens in game three of the series. Game two Sunday, West Virginia takes its first lead of the series early in the second inning. J.J. Weatherholt giving an RBI single, but missed opportunity once again, Kevin. A running, I don't know if you can really say mistake, but just an unfortunate circumstance involving Grant Hussey at second base takes West Virginia from possibly having two runners on and no out to nobody on and two outs there in that second inning. That was a big swing here in this series and in this game.
Yeah, hindsight's always 20/20, but if you leave at least one of those runners on base, maybe both, they probably walk out of that inning with two or maybe three runs scored, which, I mean, Texas Tech only scored three on the day. That would have been enough to at least force extras. Unfortunate. You like to see the fight with two outs in the inning, but just kind of a weird play. I mean, Grant Hussey gets called for interference at second base as they're trying to turn a double play. The throw to first base had gone wide, so it would have been first and second, no outs, like you said. But Grant Hussey was looking at a potential collision at second base with that turn. So naturally, he kind of holds out his arms, prevents it. We think that's probably what induced the interference call upon review.
And I think the big thing was there that had Grant slid, I think that gets avoided. Now, granted, I think you can say if Grant slides, the throw to first probably is not errant because either the shortstop or second baseman who was covering there doesn't have to get around Grant's body there. So you probably get at least one out on the board no matter what, and after review you see that Grant was out anyways. The man covering the bag had beat him just by a step, so in either way it might have been two outs regardless, but you have to wonder what happens on that play if Grant does get down and slide. Not blaming Grant there, just kind of what happens on that play.
Yeah, and the truth is, if we did what ifs for a bunch of innings in this series, we'd be doing this podcast for over an hour.
Yep, definitely. So West Virginia does lead 1-0 after the J.J. Weatherholt two-out RBI single after the top of the second, but right there in the bottom of the second, Texas Tech comes back with a home run, and then they score another run on a ground into a double play. So Texas Tech goes up 2-1 there in the second, and then a pitcher's duel from that point on. Hayden Cooper comes in the second inning after that home run was given up to relieve Tyler Sutalski. Hayden Cooper was really good for six innings of this game out of the bullpen, six innings up to the point that we'll get to here in a minute in the eighth inning. Six innings pitched, three hits, no runs allowed, four strikeouts. On the other side, Texas Tech starter Kyle Robinson was really good as well. Seven innings pitched, one run allowed, five hits, nine strikeouts for the Texas Tech starter. The problem was in the bottom of the eighth, the Red Raiders able to supply really just the nail in the coffin there as Bazell homers in the bottom of the eighth. Texas Tech really showing its power in this series. You talked about it earlier in the podcast, how they really offensively, the Red Raiders, play to their ballpark very well. That's exactly what happened in big moments in this game, in game three of the series, and then West Virginia ultimately not able to even things up. The Mountaineers out-hit the Red Raiders in the final game of this series, but the big number there when you're looking at the score column, nine runners left on base, and that's 22 runners left on base in the two games on Sunday, I should say.
Yeah, and that's going to highlight the series, but I kind of want to talk about the game of strategy played on Sunday. It's something that kind of wasn't acknowledged that much, maybe once or twice on the broadcast, is Texas Tech decided to flip-flop their starting pitchers for the doubleheader on Saturday, where starting pitcher for the first game, Mac Huer, he was supposed to be the starter for the finale. And then Robinson was supposed to go game two. So it was kind of a gamble for the early slate. And that paid off in game one. And then Robinson was dominant. And then on the other hand, West Virginia, Tyler Swatowski started the pit game on Tuesday.
So he goes again for a start, kind of more an opener role. So he was never going to go more than 2-3 innings probably. And then Hayden Cooper has his best start out of the bullpen. So actually, I thought both strategies worked really well. The only question that raises is to me as I'm talking about this now and researching is, where was Gavin Van Kempen this whole weekend? Doesn't get a start on Tuesday or Sunday, doesn't end up making an appearance the whole weekend after coming off maybe his best weekend of the year last weekend. I don't know, something to think about. But in hindsight, it doesn't really matter because pitching strategy worked out for West Virginia. Unfortunately, it also worked out for Texas Tech.
The strategy aside, the couple of things that really stand out from this series, but especially here on Sunday, the two games that we saw in this, the last day of the series, 21 strikeouts by WVU hitters, and then as I mentioned, 22 runners left on base, 13 of those, and more than half, left in scoring position. If West Virginia is going to win these Big 12 games, you have to be able to strike while the iron is hot and strike while there's runners on base. The other thing here is West Virginia only has two players with multi-hit games in either Game 1 or Game 2. Kyle West in Game 1, Michael Peraza in Game 2. Just not getting a lot of consistency out of the lineup in this series out of West Virginia. Hopefully, that's a one-series blip on the radar. I think we said that at times this year. Hopefully, that's just one thing, you know, one weekend where the bats kind of cool off. You go into next weekend against Baylor, maybe the bats heat up again.
Yeah, they're certainly streaky this season. I mean, if you look at West Virginia's conference batting statistics from week to week, they're anywhere up from like third or fourth in average and then down to 9 or 10 the next week. It's up and down. So they're just going to have to ride the wave of the hot hand. And part of that is through lineups, too. I mean, you see a new lineup pretty much every game from Randy Mazey with this team. And you have to because, I mean, J.J. Weatherholt, Logan Sauve, they've only played a couple dozen games combined. So once you throw them into the fold, I mean, there's a lot of guys down the depth chart who've started a lot of games for this team. So it'll be interesting to see where that lineup kind of stands. Like I just mentioned, I think Randy's going to continue riding the hot hand. Maybe that means Mike Peraza gets a start against Penn State or on Friday. Kyle West continues to be a middle-of-the-order guy, but yeah, I mean, a lot of fluctuation there and will continue to be something to watch.
One final note on Sunday before we head to a quick break here. J.J. Weatherholt, who does get a hit in both games on Sunday, he started and played the entire game of Game 2 of the doubleheader at shortstop defensively in the field. That was something that Randy Mazey had tried with J.J. Weatherholt here in recent days, but was unable to do successfully. So that's a great sign right there, seeing J.J. play an entire game out in the field. Now we'll see what he'll be able to do moving forward here as West Virginia has Penn State and then Baylor coming up this week. So that's a great sign right there. Unfortunately happens in a series sweep that you're on the wrong end of, but a great sign there that J.J. is able to play in the field for a full 9 innings. All right, make sure to stay with us here. The Golden Blue Nation podcast will continue right after this.
Despite the ill-fated efforts of President Biden and his wealthy New York friends, West Virginia coal is thriving and being shipped to 45 countries worldwide. Given its high quality and clean burning properties, countries across the globe are demanding and consuming it, and in-state production continues to grow. With billions of dollars of recent investment in West Virginia mining operations, combined with the reliability of our coal-fired electric manufacturing facilities, West Virginia coal is here to stay. No other fuel in the world matches West Virginia coal for base load generation and steel making. Like a good friend, it's always been and always will be there, keeping the lights on and contributing greatly to our growing economy. In fact, coal continues to sustain 50,000 plus West Virginia jobs, putting food on the table for Mountain State families. Visit friendsofcoal.org to learn more. A message from the Friends of Coal.
Ryan Decker and Kevin Redfern here with you on the Gold and Blue Nation podcast. Another baseball edition of the podcast here for you as we now get towards the end of April, which means we are getting even closer and closer to the start of the Big 12 Conference Tournament down in Arlington, Texas, there at the home of the Texas Rangers. Only four weekend series separating us right now from the start of that conference tournament. And man, these Big 12 standings are really interesting. So coming into this weekend, West Virginia, by way of tiebreaker, tiebreaker had the top spot in the Big 12 standings. And after this weekend, West Virginia now dips to third in the Big 12 standings, but still a tie for second, technically. It's a three-way tie there. Oklahoma has the top spot, 14-4 after sweeping BYU. That's the Sooners record in conference play. Behind the Sooners, you've got Oklahoma State, WVU, and Texas. In that order, 11-7, all three of those teams in conference play. Texas Tech, who just sweeps WVU in fifth place at 12-9, and then a four-way tie for sixth place between Kansas State, Kansas, Cincinnati, and Baylor. All four of those teams 9-9 in league play. UCF 10th, and if you're keeping track, that means TCU still, as we get into the later stages of April, on the outside looking in of the Big 12 Conference Tournament. Kevin, obviously still four weekend series remain for the Horned Frogs to get back in, but as we look specifically at West Virginia, with four weekend series left, it's Baylor, you've got Kansas State, TCU is the regular season finale series, and then you've got another series in there as well against Cincinnati. That's after Baylor. What does West Virginia need to accomplish here over the final month of this season to be in a good spot Big 12-wise entering the Big 12 tournament?
Well, the simple answer is two wins a weekend, and I think that's a goal you strive for and you set in the preseason. But in doing so, I think we've now seen what happens when Aiden Major and Derek Clark combined aren't at their best. So I think a lot of things are going to go right for the Mountaineers if one of them is at peak performance per weekend. If one of those two pitchers is at their best, you're probably winning at least one game. Sometimes you'll get the benefit of both of them, and sometimes you'll have performances like Hayden Cooper going over four innings, really working his best stuff on Sunday. I really think that the Sunday, the midweek, and the long relief things, the situation is going to work itself out, because over the last couple of weeks, we've seen individual performances that are really strong. So if you can throw like two of those together in one week, a three-plus inning from Hamilton Oliver, four innings from Gavin Van Kempen, four innings from Hayden Cooper. You throw those on a Tuesday, a Sunday afternoon, and maybe a Saturday or a Friday in relief. I think you definitely get two wins if you combine that with a strong start from either Aiden Major or Derek Clark. So to me, it comes down to pitching. The hitting is going to continue to be streaky, and I think Randy Macy's going to be able to figure out who those guys are. A lot of strong vets on this team. We've seen it. We've seen they can perform at a top of the conference level at the plate. So for me, it's going to come down to pitching.
It's interesting that you started at pitching, because on my list of things that West Virginia needs to accomplish here over the next couple of weeks, getting Aiden Major right was at the top of that list. But overall with pitching, I think you bring up a good point there that if you can pretty much go into every weekend series banking on at least one of those two guys at the top, Aiden and Derek, being a really good pitcher, you can probably hang your hat on that more often than not. The only issue there is, if you are relying so heavily on multi-inning performances, then you wonder how strong some of these arms are going to be by the time the postseason runs around. So eventually you got to get another starter in there to be able to give you some length, and who that is, Randy Macy, we'll figure that out here over the next couple of weeks. But that's something certainly to keep an eye on. And the other two things here to mention to me, and you saw this on Sunday specifically, cutting down on the strikeouts and then just being better with runners in scoring position. Last year, West Virginia as a team was better for most of the season at not having costly strikeouts, and they were really good with runners on base and runners in scoring position. This team has not been that to this point, but as we have alluded to and we have mentioned throughout this season, they haven't been at full strength either. And that's when you get Weather, Holt, and Sauve just fully acclimated and fully 100%. That's what can happen there. And then you mentioned this as well. Two wins every weekend. That's got to be where you are for pretty much here on out. 2-1 every weekend, and hopefully you can get a 3-0 in there as well.
And as much as a regular season Big 12 title or a second straight co-title would mean a lot, and especially this year with Mazie in his last season, you're really gunning for the top or the second spot in the standings for seeding implications in the Big 12 tournament. And while the first place spot is attainable, that second spot is much more realistic if Oklahoma continues to play fantastic conference baseball. But being inside the top four, and particularly that second spot, I think is right where they need to aim. Two wins a weekend will definitely get them there.
And the interesting thing is, you know, you talk about gunning for maybe second place here. Obviously, the Big 12 title still is within reach, but now Oklahoma's got a pretty good lead with only four weekend series left here. You look at some of the teams that West Virginia is battling against, and you look at their schedules down the stretch. Texas specifically has Oklahoma next week, and then Oklahoma State after that, followed by UCF, which has been a very good team throughout this season. That's not an easy schedule to end with there down the backstretch of the season. West Virginia, on the other hand, has a Baylor team coming up this weekend that has been playing better than many people thought it would play, but is still towards the bottom of the Big 12 standings in the lower half. Cincinnati, again, right there with them, tied for sixth place, but you're by way of tiebreaker in eighth there, the Bearcats are. After that, you've got a Kansas State team that is in that tie for sixth, but having a disappointing season. And then that TCU series at the end is still the series that I've got circled here at the end of things for West Virginia, but a much more survivable schedule if you're trying to do that jockeying a position there up at the top of this conference for West Virginia as opposed to Texas. And obviously, with Texas playing Oklahoma State, Oklahoma State's doing the reverse of that, so they've got some interesting series left as well. So West Virginia's still in a good spot, but as we mentioned, you've got to figure some of these things out here over this last month to be in a good spot for the Phillips 66 Big 12 tournament.
And if we're thinking realistically, like, you've seen how hot this team can get at home and how they can string wins together at home. So if you get a sweep, then it gives you the you got some room to maybe go 1-2 in a series against Baylor, or it's, you know, unanticipated, but you'll take it. So, I mean, law of averages, I think, will work out there. And we say 2 out of 3 wins every weekend. That's a tough ask in the Big 12, but to me, it seems really attainable with those opponents you just mentioned.
It does seem attainable, but it's one of those things where, as we've kind of mentioned here, if all of those things we've pointed out go right, West Virginia can do that. If some of those things don't come to fruition, then the Mountaineers might not be able to attain that 2 out of every 3 goal that we've put in front of them. I keep circling that TCU series, so I wanted to look it up here. We're doing this kind of live here. TCU the rest of the way, Kansas State, Baylor, New Mexico State, and then West Virginia. Certainly the Horned Frog sitting there towards the bottom of the conference standings, but just kind of lying in the weeds, they've got a schedule that sets the Horned Frogs up to start getting hot, which is another reason why that last series of the regular season, schedule makers unkind to the Mountaineers for a second straight season.
And we've talked about it in past episodes, but just to set the scene, like, we didn't think that series is going to be as important for TCU, but they continue to stay on the cut line, and they don't look like they're going to be able to distance themselves above that cut line for the Big 12 tournament. So with every passing week, that series becomes bigger and bigger and bigger for TCU.
Right now, TCU 8-13 is their Big 12 record. UCF, which is in 10th place, did not play a Big 12 series this weekend. 8-10 the Knights are. So a game and a half total, 3 games in the loss column, separating those two teams for that final spot in the Big 12 conference standings. But that's going to do it here for this episode of the baseball podcast on the Golden Blue Nation podcast series. Make sure if you're looking for some non-baseball related news to go to goldenbluenation.com. Not one, but 2 Division I players agreeing to commit to WVU men's basketball on Sunday. Another player committing to the women's basketball team on Saturday. So that's 3 incoming transfers for Mountaineer hoops here over the last couple of days. All stories worth looking at. And then, of course, coming up here to preview a little bit, it's draft week here in the NFL. Zach Frazier will be West Virginia's first player off the board. That's undoubtedly the case there. It's just a matter of when Zach Frazier will be picked, West Virginia's 4-year center. And it's going to be interesting to see where he gets taken in this year's drafts. Kevin, any idea where you might want to see Zach Frazier get drafted?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I don't have any sort of personal preferences.
No?
No. But
nothing.
No, but he really does seem like he's like one of those players that will go to kind of like a blue collar either coach or team. I mean, those guys from NFL.com love him with the Lions with Dan Campbell, and that certainly makes a lot of sense given how the Lions drafted last year, kind of reaching for guys. So if there's a first round team, or if Zach Frazier is going to get picked in the first round, looks like the Detroit Lions, but it really sounds like they like him in Pittsburgh too, from what we've seen on social media. So he could be a Steeler, he could be a Lion, I don't know. We'll see.
Could be a Packer.
Could be a Packer. I know he definitely said he wants to play at Lambeau Field, yep. So that would be interesting. Yep. I think he would fit in nicely there from an aesthetic standpoint.
I think Zach could fit in just about any NFL organization, no matter scheme or how they're running things, but certainly, as you mentioned, a blue-collar kind of franchise, like some of the ones you just mentioned, would certainly, I think, suit him very well.
Mm-hmm. And I mentioned a couple weeks ago, I think people talk about Beanie Bishop, and he'll definitely get a workout and probably a training camp invite, but watch out for Doug Nestor. I mean, it sounds like his postseason workouts and all that stuff went pretty well, and he's met with teams, so could be two offensive linemen that come out of West Virginia in the draft.
Yeah, it would be great to see at least two, if not three, Mountaineers get taken in this year's draft, but certainly it will be Zach Frazier, who is selected at sometime either Thursday or Friday in those first couple of rounds of the NFL draft. But that's going to do it for us here on the Golden Blue Nation podcast. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast and download the free Golden Blue Nation app, and make sure to stick with us on all of your favorite social media platforms. We'll see you later.